Hello, hello. Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tall and short, and everything in between, to another edition of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, and I'm joined today by the lovely and talented Miss Sara Gong. Sara, how are you?
Very relaxed and ready to go.
And, of course, by the hairy and talented Mr. Gabriel Krauser. Gabriel, how are you?
Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. That's the sound of my beard. It's doing well. The rest of me is still figuring it out.
That's very good. Very good. And of course, Gabriel is leading many exciting campaigns this week, which we may hear more about later in the week. But let us get on to the news of today. Just a note, we have seen a video about some drama going on outside a technical school in Mpumalanga. And we'll look into that and maybe talk about it tomorrow, depending on what comes out. So the big story, I think, that made a lot of people's hopes for the country rise a bit is the sale of SAA, well, the sort of sale of SAA to a private firm. So I think it was on Friday that the government announced that they will be selling 51% of South African Airways to a company called Takatso Consortium. The government made a big deal out of the fact that this is a majority black-owned consortium, and they say that all of the funding to get SAA back in the air will come from this company and not instead from government sources. There was, however, accusations by some that this company, Takatso Consortium, had dealings with the PIC in the past, and in this case was acting simply as a channel for, that is, Public Investment Corporation funds, so that the government was still funding SAA, but through basically this private company. The Public Investment Corporation has denied this very strongly, and now there is a debate underway. Anyway, Gabriel, let me start with you. What should we make of this deal? Is this a genuine reform? Is this a good thing coming from the Ramaphosa administration? Or is there perhaps a little bit less clarity on whether this is good or not?
Yeah, so I think that people who have been strongly opposed to the relentless bailing out of a useless SAA, such as myself and all of my colleagues, have to keep the following in mind. A story from Russia. The story from Russia goes like this. The Communist Party has been running state-owned enterprises across the country. It's kind of let go of grocery stores. So now finally you're allowed to buy a potato from your neighbor and it doesn't have to sort of go through the government. In the 80s, and people are like, we need to do more privatization. This is not working. The Berlin Wall falls, the Soviet Union collapses, and whew, privatization takes off. Now, for 10 years, everything gets privatized. Every SOE. It's amazing. It's fantastic. And it produces a glorious, glorious disaster whose consequences, negative and otherwise, continue to devil both Russia and the rest of the world. Now, I remember when Francis Fukuyama came to speak at WITS in 2019, possibly the world's most famous economist to visit us since Thomas Piketty came in 2014, he made this point. He said, beware. The point is not that you mustn't privatize. When you've got a state incapable as we do, you must privatize. The point is that getting to privatization, that is starting the solution. It is by no means the solution in and of itself, because what happened in Russia is that oligarchs swooped in, bought state-owned enterprises in obscure ways for much cheaper than they were worth, did really very little to add value to them, and then resold them, sometimes a month later, sometimes a few years later, at a great profit. Is this what's happening here? Are we seeing finally the start of the next phase of state capture, which is where moribund state-owned enterprises are sold off to an elite group of oligarchs? Maybe. The procurement process was not transparent. It was an unsolicited bid. There's no indication that competitive prices, you know, that competitors were allowed to come to the party. It seems the excuse for that in part is that the bidders were black and so met the sort of only criteria that seems to matter. Whether what they paid is worth it is hard to say. One argument is that they paid too much, that SAA has sold half its fleet and maybe almost all of its fleet, and that all it really still has is the right to a few parking bays, in which case they probably paid too much, and we should expect that that means the money came through the PIC or some other government channel, and they're just sort of making some commission fees. Alternatively, they paid too little. We don't know because there wasn't a competitive bidding process. We don't really know what SAA's fleet looks like, but from the latest research that I could find, it looks like they still have a substantial fleet worth quite a lot of money, in itself maybe more than the bidding price. And then if you add the parking bays and the kind of monopoly status that it has, and you think about what kind of profits can be eked out of that over the next 10 years, yes, it might not run at a profit now, especially not during sort of low traffic corona period, but in 2023, maybe they're going to be singing and producing super economic profits and able to sell it off. We just don't know. And I think that in itself is the major sort of point of the story. It's not, if you can't see, if the process isn't transparent, if you can't see what's going into the sausage, then I don't think you should eat it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely correct. And Gabriel, you're not the only one who's concerned about the lack of transparency. The South African Cabin Crew Association and the National Union of Metal Workers both said that they found out about this from media reports and they weren't told at all about the deal. I think it's always a little bit concerning when a government that is so completely riddled with corruption sells a state-owned enterprise in a deal with no details available to the public, really, to a company that I think some have suggested is close to the ANC. Sarah, your thoughts?
Yeah, judging our discussion this morning, it seems that it's not that the black-owned company is not competent. It appears to be a really fairly sound business entity. It paid back the loans it got from the PRC, which is probably more than almost any PRC loan recipient has done. But let me just add to the concerns is that one of the things is that what they describe in Business Day is the government having taken a golden share of 33% of the entity's voting rights, regardless of how, and it's a straight 33%, and it has a certain decision-making powers over certain areas of national interest. That sort of thing worries me, because what in the hell national interest could it be? And in reading Pravin Gordhan's explanation of the deal, it rambled on and on, clearly written by somebody with communist leanings, if not membership. He kept referring to the flag and the brand, which suggests that, which in an indirect way suggests that the government is not really giving up ownership of SAA, that notwithstanding the fact that 51% ostensibly goes to private ownership, I think there will be trouble coming. Someone like Gidon Novik involved, who's done Lyft, who did Comair, etc., there's at least expertise, which I don't think the South African Airways Board has had for years. So there is expertise in the purchaser, but you know, as we know, the profit margins for airlines is incredibly, incredibly narrow at the best of economic times. And much of the advice I've seen coming from aviation experts overseas is that there's not a great deal of room in the current climate, and won't be for a long time, for airlines in the overseas markets that don't have really good records at the moment. And maybe SAA would be a lot better auctioning off the parking bays, because it has some very favorable parking bays by virtue of how old SAA is. So it has parking bays, in particularly in Britain and Europe, that carry some value, some considerable value. But I don't know, anything that is still under the aegis of Provin Gordon, I grow with Gabriel, it worries me.
Indeed. And we shall have to find out, I'm sure more details will emerge as time goes on as to what exactly has been agreed.
Except you said raised the transparency issue. Maybe not.
Yeah. I just want to say something about that, which is, so I think some commentators have sort of noticed in the sort of Twitter sphere that Jabu Moleketi, Popo Molefe, those involved with the sort of holding company not only have connections to the former connections to the PIC, there's also connections to the Arena Holdings, which is a subsidiary that owns the Sunday Times, Sowetan Citizen, and so on. And so I have questioned whether the media have failed to scrutinize this deal because of the fact that the owners don't really want people snooping around. I get the suspicion. I think that suspicion is misplaced because there are lots of good journalists outside of the Arena Holdings network. Naspatch runs the largest sort of media company in the country. And while we're often very critical of their editorial lines, they've got some good hard-nosed investigative journalists, as do the Maverick companies and so on. I don't think it's that. I think partly it's just that this thing was quite recent and quite a surprise. Mm. And partly also this underlying point that people who want privatization have not been speaking for the last years and months and weeks about, once this starts happening, how do we make sure that it happens transparently? So this is not a particular kind of small cabal of people that have been missing the ball. It's like a general problem that people have become so ground out by the obvious fact that SAA needs to be, as one economist put it, this is not force feeding a dying horse. This is shoving food into a corpse.
That's a lovely
image. It's been so bad that it's like that we've actually dumbed ourselves down to thinking, oh, well, just as long as you privatize, then it's okay. And it's not. And as it is for SAA, so we should look to sort of future privatization ventures. And this is one of the – anyway, we'll deal with that on another day. But, indeed. I think this issue's not going away.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I would like to make a historical digression that is not an analogy, but I think is useful to kind of remember. And I guess it's all based around what is the state. So some people have looked at the years that Nazi Germany took over, that the Nazis took over Germany in the 30s, and they say, look, there was a lot of privatization then. Well, not really. The Nazi Party just sold all of the companies and state-owned enterprises, which were filled with bureaucrats who they didn't trust, to members of the party, to their allies. And so while there was privatization on paper, in reality, the state and the governing party maintained control of those institutions. Now, I'm not saying this necessarily happened here, but it's something to keep in mind that this is a trick that governments have pulled before. And with that, it's always dangerous to bring up Nazi Germany because people tend to think that you're trying to say things that you might not necessarily be trying to say. But let us move on to our next topic, which is, of course, that we have a new health minister. Well, a new acting health minister. So the proper health minister is William Kizi, tried to do one of the most, I don't know what to call it, brazen dances around corruption allegations in his department I think I've seen in a while. He basically said, yes, there was corruption in my department. Yes, it was related to ANC comrades who were close to me. But also, I had nothing to do with it, and I didn't make any of the decisions, and I'm not corrupt. Well, there was an enormous amount of public pressure here, and Cyril Ramaphosa has placed him on special leave. I'm not really sure what that entails necessarily, but his position as health minister has been taken over by the tourism minister, who is going to remain the tourism minister but also be the acting health minister. Sarah, your thoughts on this? Your thoughts on the new minister? And should we really be having an acting minister when health is, shall we say, quite high on the agenda?
Let's put it this way. We probably have to have an acting health minister because Zweli Mkhize is on special leave, which is at the very least where he should be. The problem is that you need an acting health minister who knows something about health and who has what I call some heft. And I'm afraid Mamaloko Kubai Mgubane doesn't strike me as that person. And the fact that she's essentially a Ramaphosa acolyte does not instill confidence, either. What's really interesting about Mkhize, other than his fantastical dance around corruption, is the fact that, as I recall, I think he actually signed the contract that's at the heart of this. And he's also apparently one of the few departments where things get signed off by the minister when usually it's done at a more financial managerial level. So it really is muddy and horrible. Just on your point about it being on special leave, I think special leave is what they put you on before you've been charged with a crime, in which case you get you step down and sort of self-suspend yourself. Oh God, I don't know. It's one of those ridiculous things, but he'll be paid a lot of money for a long time for doing nothing, is the upshot of it. But the really worrying thing, as I say, is that it had to be the one position, acting position, not permanent, but the one position that possibly could have been held or should have been appointed by someone outside of cabinet by virtue of it involving the pandemic, which does affect the tourism minister, but she should be left to tourism to deal with that side of it. I think to just bring in someone to run it while they're running their own department, wow, I mean, health is a hell of a department. It's also a department in a hell of a lot of trouble and has been for a lot of years across province as well as national. So all in all, I think this is I did not think Ramaphosa has done well on this one.
So, of course, you might be able to argue that since the government's done such a bad job of containing COVID and all these things, that there really isn't much of a tourism sector. Yeah, that there isn't much of a tourism sector to worry about at the moment. So, Gabriel, mm-hmm. I have this crazy conspiracy theory, which I came up with in discussions with my dad based on things that he had told me, that basically national health insurance, which, of course, we've been talking about for a while as a big threat to the health system in this country, is going to create a giant pot of resources in the health ministry because the health ministry will have such enormous power over medical contracts and that kind of thing. And so whoever controls the health ministry potentially wields an enormous patronage tool. And so the crazy conspiracy version here is that Ramaphosa saw an opportunity to get rid of someone who he didn't think was that reliable, which is Zweli Mkhize, who has his own ANC leadership ambitions, and instead appointed a loyalist to the role. Is that crazy? Am I just making things up, or do you think that's realistic?
Well, here's another way of putting it. What does Kubai Mgubane bring to the party that might serve the interests of ordinary South Africans? Let's make this question very precise and specific. Turns out that as a report, great investigative journalists found out and disclosed last week Sunday, 15 million vaccines were offered for free by Gamaleya and Russia, Sputnik V vaccines, which are very good vaccines, to South Africa. This offer was made in February. They would have been delivered from March to May. They all would have been here by now, and they all could have been injected by now. If you add the number of people that have been infected and recovered, if you just vaccinated 15 million other people who wanted to, not those who don't want to, you would have taken South Africa to the kind of place where the UK is, where 80% of people kind of have herd immunity. There's a kind of herd immunity. It's very hard for the virus to spread much more, and soon enough, everyone can go back to the discotheque. Okay, so it could have been great. Didn't happen. Hard to say why, but certainly it was from our side that was rejected. So is the new health minister coming in to grovel and say, we're so sorry that after turning away free vaccines, we then moaned about vaccine nationalism being the reason that we can't do this. Please, could we have some free vaccines? Is the new health minister going to say, look, we stopped the private sector from being able to purchase vaccines, so we've got this terrible bottleneck where our useless procurement officers have to be the only people that are allowed to go and buy these things. We're terribly, terribly sorry. Dis-Chem, Clicks, Discovery, Hollard, whoever you are, Sarah Gon and Nicholas Lorimer, if you guys can find someone to buy vaccines from overseas, go ahead. We're very willing to support you. Is the new minister going to do that? Is the new minister going to say, look, we hear that doctors are saying that if you roll out NHI, then we're going to leave and set up business in a place where our work is not effectively going to be expropriated without compensation. And once we go, the middle classes are going to follow those who can, and that'll really tank this country. Okay, we've listened to these doctors. We're so sorry. We didn't think about it very clearly. We're going to abandon NHI. Is the new health minister coming in to abandon NHI to secure the country's future? No. You can go up and down the line from the most serious to the most trivial kinds of reforms that you would expect the health minister to implement. I mean, our new health minister could also just come straight in and say, we're terribly sorry about how we humiliated ourselves in the country by sort of commanding you not to wear open-toed shoes or buy bikinis in winter. That was the kind of thing that embarrasses the trust relationship between citizens and government. And for that to happen while we're stealing money, oh, it's very terrible. We'll never do that again. We're very sorry. Our predecessors were terrible. Is that what we're getting? No. We're getting just the more same, more same, in terms of the things that really matter. So then one wonders, what are the competitive advantages? Outgoing health minister was at least a doctor. The incoming health minister, I believe, is not. The outgoing health minister had some heft. The incoming health minister, I believe, does not. So what's left is, well, what you said in that context starts sounding sadly plausible.
Indeed. Anyway, maybe the health minister will surprise us. We shall have to see. But let us move on to our last topic for today. And so some of you may be aware that every Monday, President Ramaphosa's office releases this thing called From the Desk of the President. And it's basically a piece written by Ramaphosa with Ramaphosa's name on it that just talks about whatever issue the presidency would like to sort of discuss this week. This week, of course, we've got June 16th, which is a public holiday on Wednesday. And so the president was reflecting on June 16th, and he started it by saying that it was disturbing that 40% of South Africans, Gen Z kids, don't know about June 16th. So this is according to a survey. So Gen Z, just for those, or Gen Z rather, for those who may not be aware, is people between the ages of 6 and 24. I think that's the way it's at least defined in the survey that the president is quoting. Apparently, only 40% of them have never heard of June 16th and the Soweto uprising in 1976. And even more than that, another 40% apparently have heard of it but don't really know much about it. So the president bemoans this as a great tragedy because he says that we're losing our history and that we're not able to... He goes on to talk about how consciousness and the desire for change is rooted in the past. And so it's very important to understand the past so that we can transform the future. Let me go start with you, Gabriel, on this one. Is the president right to be so concerned about this? And what are your thoughts on this issue of remembering the past, particularly June 16th?
Yeah, I think it's pretty wild that 40% of youngsters don't know what June 16th means. My fiance didn't know what it means, but that's because she grew up in Russia and Germany. If you've grown up in this country, it does seem like an important day to understand. And you get a public school holiday every year for it. I think that last year I was in Soweto in Hector Peterson Square on June 16th doing a live TV debate on SABC where George Floyd had just been killed. So it was convened by the Nelson Mandela Foundation to say that, you know, it's not just in America where there's systemic racism, it's also here where black people are being killed by black police, but it's because of whiteness. And that was the sort of opening argument. And then it's, okay, it's not just that the police are fundamentally racist. It's also the fact that schools are fundamentally racist. Even if you have only black teachers, it's still racist because the idea of a school comes from whiteness. And the idea of a university and of learning, it's those are white ideas. Then someone said that democracy is racist and the idea of voting is racist. And that was the second time that someone had said that to me on a live TV debate. And then someone said that money is racist and working is racist. And even the idea of leisure and holidays, these are also racist ideas. And then eventually someone put us out of our misery and literally stood up and said, everything is racist, excepting black pride. And that was a moment of relief because we'd reached the conclusion. Of course, we were sitting in Hector Peterson Square, and this was a tribute to the June 16th revolution and its legacy. The reason people don't know about it is in part because the sort of tastemaker's idea of what you need to know is that everything is racist except black pride. It's just, it's very, very reductive. It's very simple. But there are, of course, other points to make, like the fact that, 5% of students passed matric, 5% of students who started grade one in 2008, then passed with a matric maths in 2019. The school system is basically child abuse. Public school, public education in this country is literally the world's worst on a bang for buck basis. Economists said that a few years ago, and since then it's gotten worse. So, it just seems like a special case of kids not being taught well. And I think it's a terrible shame.
Indeed. Sara, your thoughts on that?
I am even more cynical than Gabriel, and I'm not sure if that's humanly possible. But what one has to remember is, as you said, this is a function of schools. This is part of what schools should be teaching, and one assumed it was part of the history syllabus, except one has to remember that the ANC was in no way involved in this event. It didn't organize it. It didn't pursue it. It wasn't the brains behind it. It could obtain none of the sort of cachet that goes with what was June the 16th and the whole uprising of school kids around the teaching of Afrikaans in schools and where that subsequently led. They only benefited, and this was a sort of a problematic benefit, in that a lot of youngsters fled the country and sought out the ANC in exile for training. The problem, however, was the ANC in exile couldn't cope with the number of people that were coming in. And so it had this huge influx of young kids that needed to be properly trained and weren't. That was the benefit that the ANC got. But the ANC was not involved in this at all. It was ZAPO organized. And ZAPO, in the long run, was one of the, well, let's call it one of the opponents of the ANC when they were fighting for political power in the 90s. And we know from Anthea Jeffrey's book, sorry, I've gone blank on it, but
The People's War.
The People's War, sorry, that the ANC's plan was to eliminate its rivals. And if you eliminate, for example, amongst others, ZAPU, which effectively happened, you either take ownership of the history because you are the victor, or you let the history die an ignominious death. And I think June the 16th falls somewhere between the two as far as the ANC concerned. It's the ANC can't ignore it because it was such a big event, but it can be jealous of the fact that it wasn't the ANC's rodeo.
Indeed. It is a curious little thing, and I think it shows the political skill of the ANC that they have been able to sort of co-opt this holiday as almost an ANC event in a lot of ways. And I'm sure we'll see that on Wednesday. What festivities there are will definitely be tinged with a party political background.
It might be the case that what the survey, the people who went into the survey did was ask, look, do you think the ANC was involved with June 16th? And 60% said yes. And so they're like, okay, so they don't know anything about it. And 40% said no. And they're like, okay, so 40% do know. And then they didn't tell Ramaphosa how they figured this out. They just said, look, we figured out 60% of people literally don't know the first thing about this. And then he said, I'm very worried. Maybe that's, I don't know if that's what happened. But
I wish that were the case. It would be quite delightful. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. So we will see you tomorrow. We hope you enjoyed the show and have a wonderful day. Cheers, everyone.